Now let's back up another 100 years. In the middle of the 19th century, in England, a writer named Marianne Evans was working away at serious, ambitious novels. And because they were so serious and ambitious, not ladylike, she didn't publish under her own name. She wrote as George Eliot. And now, a century and a half later, her novel Middlemarch is one of those great books you have to read if you want to be taken seriously as a reader. The main character of Middlemarch is a maybe too nice 19-year-old girl who marries a pedantic old bore. But the book is the chronicle of her whole town, the town of Middlemarch, her family and friends and neighbors. You can argue about whether it's the best 19th century novel in English, but it's definitely a contender. Rebecca Mead has just published a book called My Life in Middlemarch. It's partly literary biography and criticism, partly a memoir of the book's impact on her. As she told the New York Times,
"You don't have to have read Middlemarch to read my book. You do have to have read Middlemarch to be a completely evolved human being. But everybody has a chance of doing that eventually."
I, of course, was exaggerating slightly. And I was trying to say that I didn't want people to feel intimidated about reading my book by feeling that they had an 800-page piece of homework that they had to get through before they read it. But I do think that Middlemarch can help you grow to be a wiser, more thoughtful person, and can also be a greatly pleasurable experience at the same time.
I want you to read a little bit of Middlemarch before I have you read any from your work. The sort of introduction, or at least what we're calling introduction to Dorothea in the first chapter.
"Her mind was theoretic and yearned by its nature after some lofty conception of the world which might frankly include the parish of Tipton and her own rule of conduct there. She was enamoured of intensity and greatness, and rash in embracing whatever seemed to her to have those aspects, likely to seek martyrdom, to make retractions, and then to incur martyrdom after all in a quarter where she had not sought it. Certainly such elements in the character of a marriageable girl tended to interfere with her lot and hinder it from being decided according to custom by good looks, vanity, and merely canine affection."
Oh, canine affection. That was Rebecca Mead reading from George Eliot's Middlemarch. It is a truth universally acknowledged that Middlemarch is one of the great novels of the last two centuries. Lots of people call it the best English novel of the last of ever. It's that and more to you, right? It's kind of a life manual.
Well, I first read it when I was 17, and I was completely seized by the story of this character, Dorothea. She's a young provincial woman yearning for a more significant life. And I was a young provincial woman yearning for a more significant life when I read it. And so it seized me and it has continued to hold me through 30 or so years of rereading. And at different times of my life, it's expressed different things to me and made me recognize different things about my own life. So I would say it hasn't taught me how to live my life, but living my life has taught me how to read it better.
And has it changed your life? Let's say that, like so many other 17-year-olds, you had come upon and been gobsmacked by Siddhartha or a Kurt Vonnegut novel. Would you be a different person as a result?
Well, I think I would be a different person had I chosen a different novel. It was something about this book and the kind of seriousness of it, as well as the irony and the ambition of it, that spoke to me.
When it came out in pieces. It was serialized. How did people react to the pieces? Was it a success immediately?
It was a success immediately, yes. People were on tenterhooks waiting for the next installment. There are great stories of a bishop hiding a copy of it in his hat as he's at some religious convocation, dying to read it. And everybody was eager to read the next installment. It was like watching a serial on television.
Let's say Downton Abbey.
Maybe not. You know, in terms of its seriousness and its ambition and its weaving, interweaving of stories, it's closer to something like The Wire, if not in content, in its aspirations.
I'm sure. Was it a milestone for women in English literature that, oh, this great novel written by a woman?
I mean, there were other great female novelists, not just Jane Austen, but the Brontes and Elizabeth Gaskell, and there were lots of great Victorian novelists. I think that the use of the masculine pseudonym kind of sets her apart, and she chose a pseudonym not simply because she was a woman, but because she was a notorious woman. She was living out of wedlock with a man that was extremely scandalous at the time. And so she wanted to hide her identity, but she also chose to hide her gender in order not to be dismissed as what she had called a silly female novelist. She wrote a famous essay called Silly Novels by Lady Novelists.
One of the great essay headlines of all time. And this novel, certainly, and her others, but certainly this one, is, I'm going to get hate mail, but less girly than Jane Austen's books, less so than the Brontes, isn't it?
It is. I mean, she's very much not a woman's writer or just writing about the concerns that we think of as only female, this the novels that chart the progress of a young woman to marriage. I mean, she does chart the progress of young women to marriage, but...
And again...
Marriage and remarriage. But yes, she was taken as seriously as anybody was taken, and taken more seriously than most.
Reading it now as a book, do you ever feel, and you read it every few years, so you've read it many times, that this could stand some tightening and editing and revision now that it's a book, and go back and you could cut 50,000 words out of it?
Maybe if I were an editor, I would want to do that. As a writer, I just glory in the sentences and the language and the story, and I would not lose a word of it.
Right. It's just like more episodes of The Wire. Would that there were more episodes of The Wire or more chapters of Middlemarch. There's a passage in your book that I want you to read. It's the last two paragraphs on page 16, which are about the act of reading a novel such as Middlemarch.
Reading is sometimes thought of as a form of escapism, and it's a common turn of phrase to speak of getting lost in a book. But a book can also be where one finds oneself. And when a reader is grasped and held by a book, reading does not feel like an escape from life so much as it feels like an urgent, crucial dimension of life itself. There are books that seem to comprehend us just as much as we understand them, or even more. There are books that grow with the reader as the reader grows, like a graft to a tree. This kind of book becomes part of our own experience and part of our own endurance. It might lead us back to the library in midlife, looking for something that eluded us before.
That's Rebecca Mead reading from her book, My Life in Middlemarch. As you say, you read it first when you were 17. You read it again and again and again. Tell me about how it strikes you as differently as a 40-something-year-old than as a 17-year-old or a 28-year-old or a 36-year-old.
Well, when I was 17, I did think it was all about the struggles of aspiring youth because I was an aspiring youth. And when I read it in my 20s, I thought it was all about the problems of love and who to marry and whether to marry. Those were things I was thinking about, although I didn't get married until I was in my 30s. In my 30s, when I read it, I was very struck by the story of Tertius Lydgate, who's a doctor who aspires to do great things and ends up not doing so. And by that time, I was sort of into my professional career and hoping that the same would not be true of me. And by the time I was in my 40s, I read it in the light very much of my parents' marriage. There's a couple in Middlemarch, Fred Vincey and Mary Garth, who have been betrothed since childhood and marry one another. And when I was 17, I had absolutely no interest in them. They're sort of the boy and girl next door story, and it was so unglamorous and so unromantic. But reading it as an adult in middle age, I had the sort of dawning realization that this was my parents' story, that they had met when they were 15 and married at 21 and were married for 60 years. And so I came to look at that relationship in Middlemarch with such a different attitude and such an admiration for the idea of long-lived, enduring love.
Well, and that's sort of if the book has morals, and it does have a lot of morals. In fact, some people don't like it as much as, say, Jane Austen because it's enough already about telling me how to live. But it is that. It is that these small-looking lives can be unknown acts of heroism and great humanity.
Right. Well, that's the beautiful ending, the last lines of Middlemarch, where George Eliot talks about the power of lives that are not fully realized and that are not fulfilled on some grand scale, but that can have an impact on the lives of those people around them.
You talk about her relationships and her life in great detail in this book, which is interesting. There's a reticence in talking about your own life and loves and the details of you. Was that a strategy, or are you just a English person full of decorum?
I wanted, my book is extremely personal. It's very much my story of my relationship with this book, and I don't think anybody else could have written it or would have wanted to. But it's not deeply confessional. It's true. It is not. I hope that I give enough and elide enough to satisfy and.
I'm sure you will, all readers, but I've known you for a long time, so I was looking for the dirt, okay? I'm sorry. Have you ever had the thought of, God, I wish I could ask George Eliot X?
I do sometimes think that. If there were anything that I could be brave enough to ask her, and if she said, oh, ask me any personal question, it doesn't matter how personal, I would ask her about never having had children herself, because I'm the mother of an 8-year-old, and that's a very central experience, the central experience of my life. And I would be interested to know how she felt about never having done that, whether there was any difficulty in relinquishing it or whether it was something that came easily to her. But that's a very personal question. I'm not sure whether I'd even
She'd
dare.
Slap you.
Yes, I don't know what she'd do. I'm not sure that I would dare.
Do you feel as though having spent so much time thinking about it, wrestling with it, that it will now, presuming you continue to read it every few years, it will have a different resonance or that you'll feel slaked?
I'm pretty sure I have not worn out my love for it in writing this book, and I'll be interested to see the ways in which it unfolds to me.
If you have worn it out, that would be an interesting piece, and you can come back on and talk about that. Rebecca Mead, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Kurt.
Rebecca Mead is the author of My Life in Middlemarch and a staff writer at The New Yorker. So, what do you all think? Is Middlemarch the great British novel that everybody has to read? If not, what is? Bleak House? Pride and Prejudice? Heart of Darkness? You can tell us online, or even better, call us at 646-580-0360. The phones are open, as they say. Tell us what novel you'd choose, and we'll get some of you on the show in the coming weeks.